Hey, listeners, before we get to your show, this is a blast from your past. Were you hanging around in the 90s watching Nickelodeon before you got too old for it and started smoking weed and doing drugs? Well, then you should know us. This is Danny Tamborelli and...
And this is Michael C. Marona. We're here to ask you to check out our podcast, The Adventures of Danny and Michael.
And here's our on-air producer, Jeremy, to tell us what you'll be hearing.
You can hear things like minisodes, full episodes, nostalgia dumps, interviews with some of today's hottest comedians.
That's right, Jeremy. All of those things and more. So check us out.
The Adventures of Danny and Mike.
On the Seltzer Kings Network.
Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three relatively grown men binge the iconic HBO series Sex and the City. So dust off those DVDs and grab yourself a white wine or even a Cosmopolitan and settle in. Take it away, boys.
Welcome to the Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three guys watch their way through Sex and the City for the first time ever, mostly. I'm Corey Cavan.
I'm Kevin James Doyle.
My name is John Sieber.
Gosh. And we're bringing you some new content. Wow, wow, wow.
Have this you ever done something you've never done before? Have you ever stepped into a world you've never been in before? That's what you're in right now.
Buckle up. Here's the deal. Listen. We're getting to the end of the series, and as we've said from the very beginning, once we watch the last episode, are we watching the movies? Yes. Once we're done with the movies, one and two, we are all going to go to one of the most iconic bridges in Sex and the City. We're going to jump off, and that's the end of the podcast. That's
what?
It.
What's
what
the iconic bridge
iconic
in Sex and the City?
What
anyone, whichever to. One's tall enough. This,
it's, dude, it's the one where Big fell in, or where Carrie fell into the water in Central Park, and we'll be fine.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
Didn't, and she just fell like kind of under that bridge. She yeah. was just at the boat place. Yeah, and we're gonna, be okay.
No, once we're done with the series, we have plenty more to do. But there's a few episodes throughout the series that we've, you know. We're watching this for the first time. We didn't anticipate how much the one was going to be the one episode for right. our fans. These are some people's favorite episode ever.
Right.
And go ahead, Corey.
We should give some context as to what you're saying. We have done this episode before. We've already seen this. We watched it a couple episodes ago with the Women of the Self-Helpless podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great episode. They were super funny. And we had six people on the mics. I think you probably remember in the beginning of the episode where one of them just said, "This is a bad idea because there's so many people." And it was not a bad idea. It was a really great episode. It was awesome. But there is
it did
so
give
much
us an opportunity
on.
To do those classic Sex and the City story deep dives that yeah. we've become known and loved for.
That's true. When we did have people reach out that said, I liked the episode, but I feel like it, I wish I would have had some JTB time
yeah.
for you guys to really go deep into it. Because some big things happened in this episode.
Sometimes you need a little JTB time. Like we all just need a little bit of JTB. We rewatched the episode. We, like many of you who rewatch Sex and the City, we texted, we sent out the bad signal and said, "Hey, let's rewatch the one." Kevin and I were eating dinner. Corey, I think you were making dinner. And so we had it on and we refreshed ourselves with the episode and we're ready to take a deep dive into this yeah. episode.
Yeah.
We know it's a fan favorite and we want to give it the respect that it deserves.
Yep.
And the tangents that we may have missed.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's kind of funny. There's already some foreshadowing that we missed the first time through, such as the Big Mac joke.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Petrovsky talking to Carrie about, or Carrie about the Big Macs. And we know two episodes later, they leave the Met and go get Big Macs themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. They go to old Mickey D's. Did they go to the McDonald's at West 4th or did they go to another one?
No, because they would have been up on the Upper West Side.
It looked like the double decker McDonald's, which is why I asked that. The McDonald's at Westforth has a balcony. It looked
that particular McDonald's has a YouTube video from 7 years ago that's pretty horrific.
Oh, does it really? Because I got an ice cream cone.
A big fight.
I got a dollar ice cream cone there the other day, and they fixed everything because it was delicious.
Dude, you like you like dollar cones?
Dude, I love dollar cones. Listen, dollar cones, they have them at Chick-fil-A. They have them at McDonald's. There's a little place called QT. It's a mega gas station in like the mid-Atlantic
southeast. You talking about Quick Trip?
Yeah, you know Quick Trip?
Oh, come on, man. That's nationwide. Hey, is it? I think so.
It might be. It just got to where I grew up. Listen, if you're a Quick Trip fan, throw a comment into any of our social medias. Just write QT. QT and do the little ice cream cone emoji.
And if you stop at Flying J, get the fuck off our podcast.
Get out of here. If you go to Sheetz.
I prefer Flying J. I'm just going to throw that out there. I like the J. I do.
I got to say.
I want to cover. This is what I want to know. What do you think Sarah Jessica Parker and Petrovsky's orders were at McDonald's?
That's a great.
A couple episodes later. I wonder if they split a 20-piece nugget, but they only ate 3 nuggets.
I mean, my favorite order from McDonald's is something that I heard from Jack Black describe a long time ago, and it's the McSurf and Turf Deluxe. Are you all familiar with that?
I mean, I could guess what it is, but keep
fish
going.
Fillet.
Quarter pounder with cheese, take off the bun, fish fillet, take off the bun, sandwich them together with a layer of french fries in between.
Good God.
McSurf and Turf Deluxe. Delicious.
That's great.
I gotta say, it's a piece of art too,
so Petrovsky would like it.
Yeah, that's true.
Instead of double cheeseburger, which are $2, you just get a McDouble. It's like 80 cents less, and all the difference between a McDouble and a double cheeseburger is just one piece of cheese. You get the McDouble. You get the buffalo sauce.
It's just frugal Kevin right there.
I know that is right there. I'm like going even frugal at McDonald's.
Why? How is that? Yeah, frugal.
Here's my thing.
Because guess what? McDonald's is tricking a bunch of fucking people into spending 80 cents more for cheese. Sorry that I gamed their system. Did you know my favorite thing about this is?
Let's deep dive the episode and talk about the story plots, and now we're in an argument about frugality at McDonald's. Oh,
my
man.
Favorite thing, though, about not only you but any of us being frugal at any place is like, yeah, here's what you do. You don't do this one. You do that one. And then cut to like 3 months from now, and it's like, yeah, I'll take another 4 gin and sodas. Yeah, I'll sit outside in New York and have 4 more drinks for $14 a piece. Meanwhile, I don't want to pay extra for that quarter pounder.
SeriousEats.com, McDonald's cheeseburger versus McDouble.
Someone is so into law theory.
Dude, listen, I'm not getting gamed by McDonald's or anybody
else. I'll say this. The quarter pounder is a solid choice across the board. A little too rich, but very solid.
Well, I guess they would. I would think that Carrie Bradshaw getting McDonald's is a bit of a plot twist. They don't have, I feel like the modern day, there's like pretty good eating habits on this show. And I feel like there's way more like obsessive Instagram-y diet culture now. Like if this show was made now, what?
In other TV shows or?
I don't know if in TV shows, but it's like,
I mean, this episode in particular had some like pretty interesting eating.
It did. It had
Carrie at McDonald's. It had Miranda like crushing an enormous cookie.
And then they go to Russian Samovar and just dig in on some herring. Yeah, there's some herring and beets. They go all in on a Russian feast.
Yeah,
yeah. Like none of them are juicing or on like weird diets and stuff. Which there's always diets, but I feel like we are at peak health food fad and people talking about it.
I feel like back then, early 2000s, was that still like the low fat?
I feel like that was an Atkins. South Beach diet. You're probably South Beach then, yeah. But so you know what's interesting about Sex and the City is they do a lot of diner time. They're always doing diner time, and no one's ever ordering like an egg white omelet. They're always at the diner. This is not the first time we've seen McDonald's. Carrie and Big get McDonald's.
Yeah. And she brought it over.
Yeah. And then, you know, bucket of fried chicken when she got stoned with that guy. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of New York eating in this show, which makes sense. Like, you know, like I mean, we all have it, like friends that live in Los Angeles. And I mean, like, I would say the three of us, we talk about diets, like we're pretty healthy mm-hmm. people. But I think in LA, you have more friends, stereotypically, but also true, that, you know, get more into juicing, nobody smokes, stuff like that. And then, or at least, I guess that is more stereotypical. But then, I mean, how many times with either one of you have I been out at 2 a.m. and gotten more than one slice of pizza? In the past,
dude,
like,
it's funny that you talk about that, because the last time I got McDonald's at 2 a.m. was when I was with you all in Los Angeles.
Oh my gosh, you're absolutely right. That's the same for me.
Yeah.
Wow, what a paradox.
Shout out to all Jen.
Let's talk about Charlotte's miscarriage. So, no,
okay. Hard left.
Hard left.
Remember we used to do hard lefts time ago? Wow.
They just became part of the fabric. There was no need to call it out anymore.
Yeah.
No, it's just what it is.
Where are we going to start with this one? We have four major plot points. We have Samantha's gray pube getting older. We have Charlotte's miscarriage. We have Carrie meeting Petrovsky. Mm-hmm. And then I think like the big, big storyline in this one is Miranda, Robert, laundry room time, which, by the way, if Ma didn't bring over, or if Ma didn't tell her to put the cake in the laundry room, would they have ever said I love you to each other? Is Ma the reason that...
Maybe, because you got to take the cake where it can be cool.
Yeah.
She's the... Yeah. Let's start with Miranda and Steve. Let's not bury the lead. Let's bury Robert Leeds.
All right.
Okay. Oh, you know what? Before we start with that, I want to throw one thing out and we can come back to it as we go. I feel like we're almost at the end of, in the rewatch here, we're almost at the end of 6A. The series itself has taken on a different feel. And I feel like we're watching like an early 2000s New York movie. Mm. Down to like the music, down to the costumes, down to the way the show looks. Like,
yeah,
it just feels like a bigger show. And I feel like that kind of colored and changed a lot of what, and it not in a way that I was like, this is not Sex and the City, but there was something where I was like, I feel like I'm watching something like a movie that came out around the time Devil Wears Prada came out.
What was that like? There was that high pitch music vibe.
Oh
going
my gosh,
the whole
what
thing.
Was that?
I don't know what even instrument that was.
I
liked it too, man. It started when like Carrie and Charlotte were sitting on the couch, and and Carrie, who I will still stand by my guns, great friend this episode.
Yep.
I agree. Is like counseling Charlotte, and that music comes in.
Ooh. And her advice to Miranda was very good. Like it was firm. It was like some good Dr. Phil tough love, but also like there was like some patience with her too. There was just like, listen, you can't do that. We gotta go to bed. You know, like sometimes sometimes you just want to have a friend to wallow with, which is great. And then sometimes you need those friends
that are
just going to be like, hey,
turn off tools and
we could do this for another hour.
Yeah.
But what you really need, you know, like I feel like we've had that, Corey or John, like sometimes when it's like, you know, one last drink and it's like, would love to spend that time with you. Let's not order that. Let's go to bed. And it's like, okay, that's right. And
shout out to that person in your life. If you're listening and you have that person in your life that shuts it down, send them a thank you text right now.
Yeah. Tell them, be like, thanks for telling me to turn off Jules and Mimi and go to bed.
Yeah.
You know,
dude,
that's like, you know, I think that's a hard thing to say to someone sometimes.
It is. Yeah, it is.
But yeah, Jules, that's also the worst thing that she could be watching at that point now, that it's like, she's watching she's kind of like self-inflicting her own pain or whatever, or stress by being like, here's this person that I'm with and I can't process it. I'm going to watch the fantastical version of what our relationship should be.
Isn't like, that what we all do though?
Oh yeah. Are you kidding?
That's why I thought it was so great. Yeah.
I mean, that's like what, whenever you're sad, you don't listen to music much, John, but it's like, whenever I'm sad, I'm not just like, oh man, I gotta lighten things up. It's like, oh, I have like 10 albums that I always go to that I'm like, ooh, we're going to get sad.
Yeah. What are your, let's not do all 10, but give me two sad albums. And John, would you have any? If we
No.
You don't.
Joni Mitchell, Blue.
I'll take one though. I'll listen to one of those. Let me know. Okay. I'm sad. I'll just say album and send me one.
Yeah, Joni Mitchell Blue is one that I listen to like every fall, like when the leaves change. Mm. Like, and also Bon Iver Forever to Go every fall, because my ones. Harlan, one of our last guests, gave that to me like when I first moved to New York. Mm. And those two, it's like they feel very of like a, you know, like when you put your coat on and it's like feels mm-hmm. mentally like back to school and mm-hmm. like. It's totally. I feel like New Year's, I'm not like January 3rd, not even first, but it's like once it's actually back January, I'm never like nostalgic or like I'm sort of like it's a new year, but I always get very like melancholy in the fall. And that's when I bust. That's when I get very Miranda watching Jules and Jules. And
so here's Mimi. Here's something that I thought about the second time around is that I was a little bit off put by Robert the second time watching this around. Like I get his plan was to buy a cookie, eat the pizza with Miranda, open mm-hmm. up the cookie. And mm-hmm. then do you think he was going to say like something like, I love you. I appreciate you. You're great. Because what he did is he got her the cookie. He left. And then he came to her and was like, What'd you think of the cookie? And like, I think he should have taken some initiative and been like, I know I had to run. I left you the cookie. I know you saw it. And it's because I wanted to tell you this. And then he should have actually said the words, I love you. Instead, he just kind of like sat there and waited for Miranda to initiate the thing that he was feeling. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. These are the first like cracks in the amazing facade of Robert Leeds. And I feel like when we saw it the first time we talked about it in that episode, it was like, oh, well, you know, it's like he gave her a cookie and sure, it was cute. But when I see it this time, I'm like, okay, he plans this cookie thing. So I don't know what his actual thing is going to be, but I'm guessing, I mean, if you've ever done like a grand romantic gesture for someone and you kind of have a plan behind it, I'm guessing he has that. He's obviously not just going to like say something. He's got a plan. But then the other thing is he gets a call and just abandons whatever's happening.
Right.
It's like leaving in the middle of a date, but he just leaves this like huge cookie bomb there. It doesn't do anything. And then, days later, it seems like he should have said, hey, I got to go. Do me a favor. Call me when you open that cake.
Exactly.
Or call me before you open the cake. And then because I got a plan. Or he was like, do me a favor, open it, take a bite, and then give me a call. Something. But he just left it. And then he was like, it's been 5 days. That was the first time where I was like, that was a little strange.
Yeah. Like if you, I agree.
Because you're planning a grand gesture.
Yeah. And then it sort of just, I guess it makes you wonder, I guess it makes you wonder the whole, just where he's coming from at all. Because, I mean, I guess if she doesn't mention it, then you start feeling like weird, like, but.
Yeah, that's why it's on you as Robert to say something. You
he's
know?
Initiating saying, I love you.
Now, the thing is that it ends up working out for him.
I really hope you just like went right back into why paying 80 cents for cheese is not worth it.
Now, and now here's, the thing.
Here's the thing. Cheese should only cost 40 cents.
Over the course of as many McDoubles as I have, like that's a stock that could grow. That's money towards a mortgage. Like this is no. I guess like, do we think here's a great question, a very simple one, that I think we're dancing around. Do we think that Robert Leeds loves Miranda?
Great question. I think Robert Leeds is ready to take the leap because I think he's really into Miranda. And this begs an even further question of what is love?
Baby, don't hurt me.
Baby, don't hurt me. No more.
No more.
But it begs the question of saying, is Robert Leeds ready to take the step to say, I'm really into you and I'm willing to say I love you because I'm moving into this. Like, and so it's
and you
like,
know what,
does
Corey?
He,
you know what, Corey? Oh, 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 yeah.
Thank you, Hadaway. Oh, oh.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Hathaway.
I would guess there's two reasons to say I love you.
I think he's absolutely in love with her. Like, I don't think you fall in love with someone. I think love is a choice. And I think
that's what I was trying to get at.
And I think if he is choosing to love her and the complications that evolve around someone like her, like she has a baby with someone who she's still very much active with. She lives in this building. She's like a career woman, and he knows all these things and still chooses to love her. Then I think that, yeah, of course he loves her.
So is he saying I love you as an expression of his emotions or as an action towards a deeper relationship with her? Is that why he doesn't check in with her? Because he is saying like, yes, I love you, but also doing this grand gesture to signal like, I'm willing to take this to the next level, and waiting for her, maybe sensing that he's not sure where she's at. So saying that in order to give her time and space to acknowledge she's at that level with him. Or is that giving him too much credit? He's just kind of oblivious and should check in with
him. I think the time and space thing is too much credit. I think, and the reason I think it's too much credit, if this is what you're saying, is that we saw an interruption in the plan and he let it go. His original plan was not to get called, and that one of the Knicks hurt himself on a skateboard. His original plan was, we're having pizza, but there's also another box and you can have that later. And then he's like, oh, I got to go.
Okay.
So I think his original plan, it means that he was going to present this box.
Yeah.
That's like the lesser version of leaving the box with a wedding ring and being like, I'll be back. Like, it's just like, you got to present a thing. You can't drop a bomb like that and then just be like, so what'd you think?
Yeah, but what's, I mean, there's some context there. Like, telling your girlfriend that you love her for the first time is a big deal. But also, contextually, one of his clients breaking his ankle and potentially, you know, ruining the Knicks is also a very large deal.
Granted,
I think if he was getting married, it would have been a different story, and a wedding ring thing would have been a different story. But yeah,
well, that's why I said it's the lesser version of that.
Yeah, less. Yeah. So
I guess I think he was
absolutely in love with her. I think this episode did a much better job of kind of dealing with Miranda's thoughts of her being broken. You know, when she is talking to Carrie and she's like, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with me. I think I'm broken. I can't say I love you. It's flying out of everyone else's mouth, Jules and Mimi, Robert, but I can't do it. And the payoff for that is so good when her and Steve are in the laundry room and it almost flies out of her mouth in the same way. You know, he's just sitting there holding his big candle like an idiot. And she just like can't even control it. She's like, I love you, Steve. I'm sorry. What about Debbie? I love you. And it's just like, ooh, the second time you watch it, it really just gets you.
Well, I think it's cool too, because
I mean, the Jules and Mimi, if you know what I mean.
Rewatching it this time, it was interesting to see the actual internal struggle that she was having when she was like saying that, like, I'm so fucked up. And that, like, we all have those feelings. We all have parts of our brain where you're like, this isn't a problem for anyone else. Like, you know, and it's always, we never acknowledge the 10 other things that we do well that our friend doesn't do well. Like, you always hone in on your own weakness. And Miranda is not just like, you know what? Here's all of the strengths that I have. I am a good mom. And like, you know, I am, you know, she's just honed in on this one small thing. But what's cool about the payoff of it is that the reason isn't that she's fucked up. The reason is that she loves Steve. Like, it came very easily. Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
There. And I think that was a cool moment, but that's also like a good lesson for love, to follow your instincts and to
listen to your heart when it's calling.
To follow
for you.
Your heart. Mm-hmm. But also like there was the episode was very in a good way because we've been up and down for years. But imagine the risk she just took.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like,
and Miranda is extremely risk averse.
Just straight up was ready to make it awkward with her baby's dad. She mm-hmm. was about to be faced with like him being like, I love Debbie.
She knew was Magda was going to be coming in there any second. Mm-hmm.
She knew. So there's all, yeah. So yeah, there's just like, for someone like you said, John, is risk averse, like to watch her step out and just be like, I'm not overthinking this anymore. I'm going to go with my gut because I know this is right. Was really good. And it doesn't always, you know, like,
yeah,
I guess like we were so as an audience member ready for Steve to come back and he did that. It almost within a blink of an eye made you forget how much,
yeah,
how risky her move was and how powerful
it is. You almost need to watch this episode twice because the first time you're so distracted by the beauty of Debbie and Robert. And
yeah,
you need that kind of that veneer to rub off a little bit.
Right.
And then really get to the meat and potatoes. That is Steve.
Do you need a veneer to rub off or do you need a Debbie to rub off?
Ooh.
To rub off too? Okay, I apologize. I'm sorry.
I meant Robert.
I want to rub one off to Robert is what I meant.
Dude, that joke.
What does it mean to rub one off? What do you mean? What do you mean rub one off?
You know
Kevin,
what
I'll say that joke was almost as bad as Carrie's white slavery joke.
Oh man. Can we just break this down? Because like, first of all, just a pretty dark joke already if you made a sex trafficking joke. Mm-hmm. But how it was such an easy move to just be like, I hope I'm not gonna get sex trafficked. What is white slavery besides exactly like
it's exactly what it is. It's white slavery.
It was just like just say slavery. What
like, it's okay. In defense, I'm gonna tiptoe into this.
Careful.
In defense of some, not in defense,
in
of,
defense
what she
of
said,
white slavery.
In defense of white slavery. In defense of the writing, I guess. From what I know, which maybe I don't know anything, I don't know if anyone was talking about sex trafficking and human trafficking back in the early 2000s. And I am not saying it's a good thing to say white slavery, but I think when she's saying white slavery, I guess she means like indentured servitude or something. Like, I think it's like
you are bending over backwards.
Oh, I am. But like, tell me, you and I have done nonprofits for human trafficking things. When was the first time you heard about non-trafficking?
No, totally. But it's like, it's just like the most self, I guess it works for this. It works for this because
I don't think it works. I think it's offensive.
I think it does work for this because
she is a comic
and sometimes you bomb. Okay. She is comic. She took a risk. She
you know
tried
what's
to
weird
go edgy.
Though? It, the whole comic thing, it's funny. They do play it from before he says it. She's like making these friend jokes at the Abramovic thing. And she's like, I mean, girls got an audience. And her and Charlotte's like slayed by her. And they really set that trap to be like, Carrie's funny now. And we've heard that from other guests before. And like, here's the thing. Carrie, I said on the last episode when she says the thing to Samantha about like, this is a child's birthday party. When Samantha said like, she does say some really funny things, but I do feel like they sort of set it up to be like, Carrie's going to be like delivering some jokes.
But I think they need to do that with, to contrast against Petrovsky's like seriousness, his attitude, his aura of mysterious darkness. Well, like
that, let's talk about, this is a good time to talk about the fact that they're clearly in this moment where they're saying like, we've, what do you do with the woman who's had everything? Like she's had all these different boyfriends. It's like the thing that she hasn't had is rich, dark, brooding, like Big is funny.
Big's kind of brooding.
No, but he's funny. He's a funny like guy.
She hasn't had understandably mysterious guys. Non-understandably mysterious. Yes.
I mean,
and if she has, they've been like a one-off weirdo.
Big may be brooding, and then he's just gonna pop out of the hot tub with a fucking glass of wine and be like, "I gotcha. I'm still
Big is brooding with like cartoon eyebrows. He's always like got those things popping up.
All right, brooding is defined as showing deep unhappiness of thought or darkly menacing. I think Burger's brooding.
That's true.
Oh.
No, I guess go ahead, Kevin, sorry.
I don't know. When I say brooding, I guess I was thinking more like dark and serious. I didn't know there was like a sinister aspect. But Burger is still like funny, and he's like tries to banter with her. I think this guy's
very Russian.
Yeah,
he's and like John, you've read. I'm not sure, Kevin. You might be in this camp too. I have read very little Russian literature. I've read like a little bit of Dostoevsky. John, I feel like you've read a lot of it.
Fair amount.
They play up the Russian thing, and I feel like he has, and also like, I'm going to tiptoe into it again. Careful. John, you're Armenian. So like you are more versed in Slavic and just like that culture of it. Like, I mean, everybody, you guys have seen Serious Man. Is it Serious Man? The Coen Brothers movie where they start the thing with the story about the Dybbuk. It's like it's Russian. It's everyone is very dark and mysterious. It's like it's, you know, everyone is.
So it's like this that is whole thing. What I'm saying with that is that like this is the writers trying to cover their to say like, all right, we've shown all these different pies of like, here's what like most girls' boyfriends are. Carrie Bradshaw's people, she's gonna have to land with one. Like, where's the one we've been missing? And this does kind of get to
you guys show... I think it would be great if I could read a passage of Tim Robbins' Jitterbug Pure Perfume regarding the beat to describe, Petrovsky and beats in general. Are you guys familiar
Tim
with Jitterbug?
Tim Robbins, the actor. Tim Robbins from Shawshank Redemption.
Susan Sarandon's ex-husband?
Oh my goodness. Tell me more.
I got to find it. I got to find the quote.
Okay.
You guys talk and I'll read this and I think it'll do a good job summarizing what I'm
I think this goes
what
like,
we're talking about.
We talked about
beats,
this in the
beats
last
are very
time.
Russian, right?
Oh yeah, beets and borscht. It's all Russian. Beets,
well, they
borscht,
ate it in this.
They ate it in Russian samovar. They went to Russian samovar, which is in the '50s in Manhattan. I mean, like it. We talked about it in the first time we watched this, but like it goes into that thing where it's like you're saying, Kevin. Like she's had everything, and you get to a place where you're like, life is like, yeah. Why not? Why not go out with this artist?
All right,
he's
you ready?
Weird, but let's just see what happens.
I found it. This is from Jitterbug Perfume. I think this does a great job. Talking about Tom, Alexander Petrovsky as well.
Alexander.
Tom Robbins' Jitterbug Perfume. The beet is the most intense of vegetables. The radish, admittedly, is more feverish, but the fire of the radish is a cold fire, the fire of discontent, not of passion. Tomatoes are lusty enough, yet there runs through tomatoes an undercurrent of frivolity. Beets are deadly serious. Slavic peoples get their physical characteristics from potatoes. Their smoldering and quietude from radishes, their seriousness from beets. The beet is the melancholy vegetable, the one most willing to suffer. You can't squeeze blood out of a turnip. The beet is the murderer returned to the scene of the crime. The beet is what happens when the cherry finishes with the carrot. The beet is the ancient ancestor of the autumn moon, bearded, buried, all but fossilized. The dark green sails of the grounded moon boat, stitched with veins of primordial plasma. The kite string that once connected the moon to the earth, now a muddy whisker drilling desperately for rubies. The beet was Rasputin's favorite vegetable. You can see it in his eyes. Tom Robbins.
I wish there was the thought bubble that had all of that text right above his head as he stared at Carrie in the art museum. How fucking, this is like, this is their reattempt at like first season weirdness. And they just have the thought bubble and it says all that. And all the viewers on HBO, like on Sunday night, are like, what the fuck? I'm just here to find out who she ends up with.
If you haven't read that book, listener, you read some Jitterbug Perfume. It is a fun and sexy book.
I think that's great.
Sorry for that.
That's all very true about Beats. It's very true.
And how Alexander Petrovsky is portrayed.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, totally.
He's a beat guy. He's a beat daddy.
He is a beat daddy.
Okay. Hey,
Julia Child, the chef, she called herself a beat freak.
Really?
Yeah, was in it. There's this book of interviews I read of her, and she was like, I'm a beat freak. So I feel like her and Petrovsky are both beat freaks.
So
absolutely.
So like, let's give right now on, we've seen a few other episodes with him, but right now let's give Petrovsky as a boyfriend. If we were Carrie Bradshaw, what would our 1 to 5 cosmos be for Petrovsky? 5 being, well, I guess it's just our opinion. Mine would be cream cheese poppy as a 5. And a 1 would be
burger.
And a 1 would be burger. Where would you put Petrovsky?
3, 2, 5.
Yeah, like Petrovsky, like I know they got really bad vibes from him, the self-helpless girls. Like I think Petrovsky's done some pretty interesting stuff so far. He's definitely odd. I agree. So like I take a point off for that. Like she said it was the oddest date that she's ever been on. The like unsolicited phone call was a little bit odd, but also kind of baller. And like,
yeah, also it's like the early 2000s. You look people up in the phone book. Yeah. I mean, it's fine.
And I think I kind of dig his vibe. Like the look that he gave her in the beginning was like a little bit creepy, but like, I'm kind of feeling Petrovsky right now. You know, he's a serious dude. He's trying to be funny. He like has interesting parts to him. He's an artist. I'm giving him like a 4.25.
Yeah. I would actually go higher than my gut reaction. I would give him I give him like a 4.
He's not a poppy.
He's not an Aiden. But he's memorable. He's way higher than Burger.
Yeah.
He's like the weird one that she dated.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. He's the one. If you get married, and like let's say season Sex and the City 3, opens with Big having a heart attack, which was the rumor, right? And I bet my guess is that he wouldn't die because what? That was a rumor.
But what if Big having a heart attack in the shower and dying all just happened, but there was no sound. It was just the score of the show just going dun 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 dun, and he's just gripping his chest like
my left hand.
And then it just
and then it's like
pumping his chest.
Sex in the City 3.
And then it opens up at his funeral.
It has her opening the shower curtain and
okay, so my guess would be maybe he has a heart attack. My guess would be that he doesn't die and that like maybe she goes through the crisis of thinking he's going to die, but he doesn't at the end. But let's say that Sex and City 3 opens and he dies. Think about it. In real life, there's no other person that you would circle back to. There's no way she'd circle back to Aiden because he has a kid. You wouldn't circle back to Burger because that was toxic. That is the type of like lover that it's like maybe they're not there forever, but it's like if something happens in 15 years, they're going to get some more beats over some Russian coffee. And
you think she's just going to walk over pork pie? You think she's just not going to go check out the local Yaz Club and check out his
dude?
That's true. Maybe he's on Adderall now.
You don't circle back to people like that. Those are just chapters in your life. But when you're the biggest artist in the world, that's a person.
You could
that's
go back
like,
to Slattery too. You could go back to the comptroller.
I mean, I think
what's he doing now? I think he's in jail now. I think he's had a political scandal.
R. Kelly are just peeing on each other in jail
in one cell.
Unless they're like the best in bed ever, and they're the best, like that's the only person you're going
to
circle back to.
I was making jokes. You're 100%.
I know. But
we also haven't seen how it ends. Like,
right,
you know,
that's true.
It could end with him like trying to drown her in the Russian and Turkish bathhouse or something like that.
I think it's going to be, he seems like the person that would like threaten suicide to just be like, I love you. And like, and not do it, but like he has like a lot of, or he doesn't care. I don't know. I mean,
the you guys dark read, brewing, go ahead. Where is, dark,
no, just that he'd be like, I love you. I'm going to like, I'm going to do it. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's just like a, maybe he's not like that. And he's just like kind of distant and he's like, on to the next one.
No, that's what I'm saying. He's got the dark, mysterious, like Russian weird artist thing. You don't know what he's going to do. You don't know if he's going to like threaten suicide or threaten to kill her. Like you don't, he has a lot of mystery, a lot of weird mystery. And it and like it works in the later episodes where he like shows up and he's like, I bought you this gown, you know, but like
he could be like a Bond villain and she could find that out and be like, oh, shit, you have a like a mansion full of, you know, booby traps to catch secret agents in.
He's the Count from Sesame Street. She's dating the Count from Sesame Street.
This is funny. We talked about doing this deep dive so we could circle back on all the stories, and we're almost at the end, and we haven't even covered Charlotte and cream cheese.
Well, let's cover that real quickly.
We didn't cover Samantha and Smith at all.
Samantha and Smith was in my, I mean, it's not a weak storyline. There's a lot of important stuff that happened there, namely her owning her age, which I think is a huge deal. But
that's huge, yeah.
I think Charlotte's and Harry's is like a pretty important one. And man, they play it so well. They show her mourn her loss and then just fucking own it. Coming out of that Park Avenue apartment, crushing it, looking like Kevin's microphone.
Looking like a babe.
They own it. I agree. I think what's interesting is the Samantha, it mirrors Samantha and Smith in different ways. Samantha and Smith is like such low stakes, you know? And then they sort of, you know, she like shaves it and like, and then I'm a little disappointed that she just decides not to tell him anything.
But you can see it on her face too when she lies to him. When she's like, yes, I'm a busy woman, I can't have you searching around down there. And then she kind of is like,
Yeah, it's played really well.
Like I'm reckoning with this.
But the cream cheese Charlotte one is interesting because they play it so well. They play it really well. And I guess because of having to do all that in one episode, the Elizabeth Taylor thing is good, but they do make light a little bit. You know, like it's a little bit like she turns on an E! True Hollywood Story, gets inspired, puts on a nice dress, and is over her miscarriage. And it's a, like it's weird.
I didn't take it that way. I didn't take it that way. I think I took it like what, like you're sitting at home, you're not going to this very important thing that you should be at. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to be understanding of it, and mm-hmm. that it was, you know, like it's kind of, I thought it was even interesting that like Harry couldn't be there to comfort her because it is a thing as a couple, but really like, I don't know, the guy is sort of there to be like, this sucks. We were going to have this kid, but it's kind of something she can only deal with on her own, especially knowing how much that has been her desire. And so mm-hmm. I felt like it was kind of interesting knowing that it was, I don't know, it kind of showed that like, this is like her kind of journey. She has to go on her own and work through it on her own.
Totally. I agree with that. I just think in the confines of a 30-minute TV episode, anyone that we would know in real life, this is what I'm saying, it's a sitcom. You know, if anyone dealing with a miscarriage is usually like, couple weeks, a month or two. So I mean, I don't know, you know, like versus watching one E! True Hollywood story and walking out in a pink dress and sunglasses. That was but also I'm like forgiving of that because I'm like, they show the arc and they really, I think they make up for it when she walks into the party and she says, happy birthday, Brady. And you can see that she's like made peace with it. And then he's like, did you make a wish? And she's like, yes, I did. So I think they come around to it. I just think the device is like, oh, you know, it's not cheap. It's just a quick device.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm trying to find, there was somebody had on our Instagram told us about, someone said that there was, I'll see if I can find it. But someone had an explanation for why it was the Elizabeth Taylor. There's some context there that I will have to find to tell you all about it, but that it was very
relevant,
yeah, of why that specifically.
Now, when she came out wearing that dress, Kevin, your initial thought was Breakfast at Tiffany's. Is that, that's like a famous?
It was, but then I realized it's probably not that. But it does look very Audrey Hepburn for sure.
It really does look very Audrey Hepburn.
I've never seen Breakfast at Tiffany's. Is that like a similar? Is there a theme there or a plot that we missed because I'm an idiot?
I don't think there's a theme. I think it's just the look that she has. If that's what you're, I'm tracking with that, Kevin, with the sunglasses and the dress.
All right, listen to this. This is from Kayleen Veenstra. Listening right now, and you guys are talking about Elizabeth Taylor is so inspiring for Charlotte. And if I remember correctly, she references Elizabeth Taylor when she first decides to convert to Judaism for Harry, because I think Elizabeth Taylor also converted for someone. I can't quite remember, but there are more Elizabeth Taylor tie-ins to come.
And
I think she also says Harry modeled her wedding ring after the one Elizabeth Taylor had too, or maybe I'm making this up. All right, there's a lot of potentially good information and potential spreading of false narratives on this podcast. Thank you, Kayleen.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kayleen.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do we want to touch base real quick on Samantha and Smith? I don't know if there was a ton that we need to like take the deep dive into.
I think you nailed the things of Samantha coming to grips with her age, not even coming to grips, just owning it right there. And I do think it showed off some fantastic Carrie friend moments. Like there was a little bit where Carrie was like, all right, I'm going to count to 10 and we're done. But I thought she was a good friend to Miranda and Samantha in this. And I think it was like heavy stuff with her and Smith, but also pretty light, normal stuff. It was like an aging thing with her. I thought from a like episode standpoint, the stuff of the clown wig and like Samantha's like dyed bush and stuff like that was really funny. They did like a lot of like interesting, funny match cuts and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. The bush to clown hair is one of the fantastic, great moments in Sex and the City, and we won't have it otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, so good to see Steve's mom bringing her butt heavies. So good to see Debbie and her getting along. That's the one.
Dude, I love Ma. Right. I love.
Let's close this out with some. Like, let's close this out with something we haven't done for a while. Let's shut it down with a little Steve talk.
Oh wow! Ooh. You guys, it's been a very long
It's been a long time since we've had Steve talk. I do want to say, I love how surprised Steve was to see his Ma there, as if his Ma would miss her grandson's first birthday.
That's so true.
But he knows she's someone who clearly has a drinking problem. Therefore, she doesn't show up to a lot of events that she says she's going to be at, and everyone is really hurt by it. But they're also like accepting of it because deep down she's nice.
Except Debbie's gonna crack one with Ma.
Oh, that's why Debbie's the best. Whoever rebounds with Debbie is a very lucky person.
Yeah. Also, can I show you, Corey, one of my favorite things I ever did for the Instagram?
Sure.
When watching the show on captions kind of changes the way you see certain things. And Samantha says, what will Smith think? Right?
Mm-hmm. When she's talking about her bush.
Mm-hmm. And when we were watching it, this caption came up that says, what will Smith think? And so I just posted it on Instagram and just said, yo, Will Smith, what you think?
All right. Imagine, I have our Steve talk scenario.
All right.
Okay. Wait, we got to play the intro.
Yeah.
Miranda.
We're back.
All right. This is a one man Steve talk, and it's going to be Steve. Going to the art exhibit with Carrie and Charlotte and kind of pondering the Abramovic style art exhibit with the lady trying to bring positive energy, bringing positive energy into the world by fasting for 16 days and bringing positive energy to the room.
So Steve, I was looking for my glasses, but I don't have them on for the visual, but I don't have them. Wait, so Steve is at the Abramovic thing, and
yeah,
And he is for the positivity. Is that what you're
saying? I just kind of want to hear his internal thoughts.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. So they're there.
Hey, guys. I'm sorry I'm late. Whoa. Who is that woman right there? Is that Liza Minnelli? Sorry. I've never been to an art. I've been to an art museum, but the last time was like when I was a kid. And to be honest, we went on a school trip, but I snuck out to you know, slack off and go to the Mets game. Anyway,
Steve.
Sorry, my bad. So what's up? Is she? Is this lady homeless? What's happening here? Is she? Oh, she's an artist. Well, you know who else is an artist then, huh? Huh? My cousin Daphne, because she does this kind of shit all the time. Sorry, my bad. Sorry. I'll be quiet. Hey, support the New York City arts and the schools, okay?
Oh, man.
That was Steve talk right there.
Listen,
oh, my gosh.
Everyone, I hope we covered... Time. I hope we covered some more aspects of one of your favorite episodes. It was a joy for us to do it as well, because we just want to hang out with you all as long as possible. So
yeah, let us know what you think of these deep dive episodes. Let us know if there's other episodes you want us to go back through.
Yeah.
Take 17 minute McDonald's tangents and talk about. We're happy to do it.
There's no way that was over 2 minutes. All right.
Let us know what the
McDonald's tangent?
It was a while.
Dude, I'll have 15 minute tangent about how long the McDonald's tangent is if you want. Hey,
let us know this on the Instagram. I live 2.5 blocks from McDonald's. Let us know if you want an Instagram live of all three of us meeting up at my apartment and walking to that McDonald's and making our orders one night and then just doing a Sex in the City talk on Instagram while we eat McDonald's. It's I can see it from my back window in my apartment.
A deep dive into the McDouble deep dive.
We love you all so much. You're the best. All right,
if you haven't given us a 5 Cosmo review on iTunes yet, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah,
and there's one way for you to fix that. Go do it right now.
That's right.
And we love you. All right.
We love you. Follow us on Spotify. Subscribe on iTunes. Listen.
Subscribe
to our Patreon.
We love you.
Realize how much we love you.
Later.
And you eat that meat pudding and like it.
You eat that aspic. You eat that beet. Bye, taters.
Bye.
Later, taters.
The Bradshaw Boys stars Corey Cabin, Kevin James Doyle, and John Sieber. The show is produced by me, Jeremy Balin, and narrated by Katie Sieber. This podcast is part of the Seltzer Kings Network. Check out all their great podcasts at seltzerkings.com. You can find the boys on their socials at The Bradshaw Boys or on their website at thebradshawboys.com. And as always, if you see them in the street, tip your glass. Thanks for listening.